Welcome, folks. This is the Ontolog Forum, the virtual session today, July 25th, 2013, is a mini-series planning session, and the series name is Ontology, Rules, and Logic Programming for Reasoning and Applications. Welcome, everyone, and our speakers. If you want to bring up my slides, I'll move to slide two. This is what I want to cover. Just to let everyone know, this is the planning session for this mini-series. We want to lay out essentially as much as we can today that will take place over the next few months, addressing the issues of this mini-series. Then prospective topics, goals, the speakers, and at the end, a discussion and planning session. Next slide is slide three. I won't go through all this, but our prospective topics range from ontology rule standards that we typically use to represent ontologies and rules, including, in many cases, rules that also address semantic web technologies. Ontology and rule reasoning tools and systems, basically addressing requirements, design, implementation across the board. So semantic web, first order logic, logic programming, and tools and types of reasoning. The last bullet, for example, deductive, inductive, abductive, probabilistic, etc., and there may be additional types of reasoning that you want to perform. Next slide, slide four. Also, ontology and rule reasoning optimization, mostly addressing knowledge compilation and some of the techniques people use for runtime reasoning. We think that will be of interest. And obviously, ontology and rule reasoning applications, such as really we've had some recent talks on by Dr. Benjamin Grossoff and Dr. Vinay Chaudhry just recently. Next slide, slide five, our goals. We really want to sketch out the current field of ontology and rule reasoning. We actually think about these as very related. In other ontology languages, of course, rules figure prominently and are not distinct from the so-called ontology. So standards, architectures, methods, the engines, techniques, and applications. And what are the emerging technologies, techniques, and tools for this field? What are the issues and architectures involved when you develop applications that use ontology and rule reasoning? And, of course, other aspects such as visualization, explanation technologies and techniques will be useful to think about and talk about. Next slide. Our first speaker will be Dr. Benjamin Grossoff, then followed by Dr. Harold Bowley, Dr. John Soa, and Dr. Henson Graves. Finally, the last slide, after their talks, which I'm sure will be of interest to all of us, we'll have open discussion. And during that time, we want to really address what we're going to address for this mini-series, programs and topics, and how we can best frame the discussion, organize this effort over the next few months. And of course, begin to sketch out the events and the action plans. Who's chairing, who wants to help organize, etc. Okay, thank you. Next, I'd like to introduce our first speaker. One second while I shift back. Dr. Benjamin Grossoff of Grossoff and Associates, and also Coherent Knowledge Systems, will talk about rule log and reasoning applications. Benjamin?
Thanks very much, Leo. Okay, so I know many of you were at the session that I gave June 20th on RULOG and so on. I have some slides that kind of summarize what RULOG is. If you can move on to the next slide, please. Thanks. This slide really is the only one that I'm going to cover. I know there's a lot packed on it, but I thought, well, it's nice if you can see everything. So I apologize for the small point font here. But I'm going to, there's some additional optional slides that kind of recapitulate RULOG. So RULOG, in short, for those of you who are not there, is an extension of declarative logic programs, which puts together a number of advances from R&D over the last 10, 20 years. It was prototyped in Toto at the end of the Vulcan Silk program, which I led, which was a five-year research program, and now is being commercialized by Coherent Knowledge Systems, which is a startup that I and former members of the Silk team have been putting together. And I encourage you to look at the coherentknowledge.com website for more about that. The basic idea of RULOG is to provide additional expressive power of a meta kind. And that is good for ontologies and ontology mapping. It's good for representing many sorts of applications. And what I'm thinking is that at the time that Peter and Leo and others invited me to give the June 20th session, we were thinking it would be good to give an overview about RULOG and the related technology for being able to author and generally have UI interaction about rules in natural language, which is called textual logic, have more about textual logic plus RULOG in a mini-series. And there, fortunately, is some substantial body of existing tutorial material that's been presented as conference tutorial built up over the last 9 years since 2004. It's been given at the International Semantic Web Conference a number of times, the World Wide Web Conference, most recently at AAAI, which was held here in my hometown of Seattle, last week. And it has worked quite successfully. I and Michael Kiefer are in process of turning it into a book as well, although at a rather slow pace. It's hard to find the time to turn it into a book. The latest version of it as a deck is available at the URL given here on the slide, in the middle of the slide. And that tutorial covers a number of topics, which I think would make sense to be the basis for some sessions in a rule miniseries. It's been presented at half-day length in a kind of skim some parts kind of way. It's also been presented in the past at a full day length. Many people have commented it could be even done at longer length, especially if there was more discussion. So I think we could kind of dial it up as far as whether we wanted to have, say, two or three sessions, which would, say, three sessions would correspond about to the length that it's been given at half-day conference length, three sessions of analog forum, or even a bit more. Maybe we could squeeze it a little less, whatever. I think since we would want a lot of discussion, I would recommend having at least three sessions there. So what are some of the content there? The thing that in conference tutorial form, most of the lion's share of the time has been spent on is on concepts and logical foundations of the knowledge representation and reasoning. Now, the idea of RULOG is to put the meta in knowledge. That includes higher order using the type of technique that's called HILOG that was developed by Michael Kiefer and some of his collaborators, and also very closely related, basically the same idea with a few tweaks, one way or the other, in terms of restrictions and so on. It was developed by Pat Hayes and some of his collaborators, also enabling IDs for rules to be in the language, which lets one refer to statements both initially asserted and derived, and also questions, and hence subsets of a knowledge base, and groups of axioms, groups of conclusions within the language, including for transformation, so it's good for representing provenance. There are also techniques that leverage those for defeasibility and for bounded rationality. Another part of that is also how is the semantics defined? What are some of the basic techniques for doing reasoning? In the past, the tutorial has not much covered proof theory and inferencing techniques, but I think for the analog forum audience, that would be worth going into to some degree, quite possibly. Overall, we could say that, you know, the web is about putting metadata mixed closely with data, or putting the meta into data, and the idea of rule log is to do that into rule form knowledge, where rules can look syntactically like higher order logic formulas. They're a bit weaker in terms of their semantics, in some ways, and in other ways more powerful. So, for example, being able to have defeasibility and bounded rationality. Another area which I think we could very usefully get into, and which in the past the conference tutorials have spent a fair degree on, of energy on, are use cases and applications and associated requirements analysis. And so there's material on use cases and applications in financial, biomed, legal, intelligence analysis, other areas of science, education, and some other things such as information access, contracts, and a number of other topics. So all those realms horizontally and vertically have some overlaps between them. Also, thinking horizontally, especially, talk about ontology mapping and regulations. And one of the interesting things in the rule log technology is the ability to do very fine-grained explanation of both why things are true and why things are not true. Another topic is standards and interoperability with other semantic or rule knowledge representation and reasoning. So here, important topics are RIF, RuleML, a bit on legal RuleML, SQL and Sparkle, also XQuery, which I didn't list here, first order logic and common logic, and OWL, which of course is equivalent to a fragment of those. And finally, tools, what kind of tools can be used? As I mentioned, Coherent is commercializing RuleLog, but very important large fragments of RuleLog are implemented into open source systems, XSB and Flora 2, which much of the functionality for the stack that Coherent uses is built on top of. So I think that we could, in Analog Forum, usefully have some sessions that would focus or drill down on the star-starred items here, the ones I put the little double blue stars next to, in a way which would not be only focused on RuleLog as well. So, you know, I think it would be useful to talk about these use cases and applications and how they relate to other stuff in the space, including first order. And I'm thinking here especially, for example, talk about how to do interoperability with first order or database systems using standards, and what kind of standards that aren't there now should be there. So one thing that's fairly obvious is there is a draft of a RIF dialect based on Rulog. There's some discussions in RuML about having a query language based on Rulog as well, and something I'm personally quite interested in, as well as the RIF Rulog dialect. And also, how to organize community efforts around getting different tools to support interoperability with each other. So there, I think what could be very interesting would be to have people develop some knowledge translation components that would bridge between Rulog and Common Logic, between them and Sparkle, between them and OWL, support RuleML, other dialects, support RIF, other dialects, etc., and get a good network effect of practical interoperability between them and some of the tools that people are already using in the space, which would include not only the ones I listed here for Rulog, but also things like Jenna and other open source systems that are important, such as Drools, in the production rules space. Now, in the area of rule authoring and HCI, I think there are a number of interesting things to do. So something which I presented some on June 20th that we could go into a lot more details about, I think quite usefully for this community, is textual logic, which is this technique that uses words or word senses as constants in the logical axioms and conclusions, and exploits also some techniques for relatively rapid interactive disambiguation of logical quantification and type and other related aspects of the NLP to map from unrestricted English into logic and then also back again, which is easier, and generally takes a logic-based approach to NLP. Now, there's a lot of other work that's been going on in the area of NL for rule authoring and HCI about rules, much of which is in terms of restricted natural language, and SBVR is part of that. Another important type of interaction, which I think is interesting with or without the natural language aspect, is in the direction of visualization. Some visualization is used in some of the tools for Rulog. I'll flash a slide about that shortly. But Henson is going to be talking more about that, as I understand, and Harold Bowley and some of his collaborators presented some very interesting work last 2 weeks ago now at the RuleML conference about visualization as well. Now, I think we don't want to bite off too much to chew immediately, but I think another very important topic, once we kind of get down to, let's call it more purely logical aspects of things, is to talk about how logical can be combined with probabilistic and statistical for data analysis and data mining and knowledge discovery. And there, of course, that's a very hot area, but today's techniques tend to be pretty shallow and limited on the logical side. And I don't know if we want to think of that as another area of use cases or applications or another horizontal or another set of techniques, but however we want to conceptualize its relationship to the rule stuff, I think it would be very useful to plan a little bit longer term to get into topics about that and maybe bring in some of it sooner as we go, maybe with shallower type of probabilistic or statistical techniques. Let me just mention that Rulog has the expressive power easily to represent probabilistic or statistical reasoning, but it's not optimized and it doesn't have a semantics developed directly in terms of probabilistic or statistical notions. So I think there's a lot of territory about, first of all, to have the community understand well what people can do or can't do right now, and then be thinking about how to advance the area going forward to get the combination to be both tighter semantically and, very importantly, more scalable in terms of not just the computational scaling, but also aspects of explainability and visualization, which are important for the non-probabilistic logical aspects as well. Okay, let's move off slide two, and I'm just going to flash some other slides here. Move to slide four, please, about RULOG and textual logic. So for those of you not already familiar with it, I encourage you to look at this deck. I pretty much covered the key points here, except for one on this slide, which is that it's important to understand that although classical logic is the basis for mathematics, logic programs, LP, really is the prime basis for practical structured information management. It is a logic that we should all be very proud of as computer scientists. It's a logic that was developed in the 70s and had its semantics refined in the 80s about that describes relational databases, and then also the same logic works for Sparkle and other semi-structured such as XQuery, and has much more attractive properties for practical reasoning and computational scalability. It does have a very strong relationship to classical logic, but it is not the same logic. And let's continue to slide five. Okay, so here I just, the flash is some examples of RULOG. This uses the style where the logical constants such as cell and eukaryotic and nucleus and has or anaphase or during are used directly as logical constants. It has here in the purple color, the lighter purple color, some meta information annotating rules. The at sign basically means this rule. ID means this rule is named I1. Tag is used for prioritization. We see a bit of prioritization information, which specifies that a particular rule, such as the second one about a red blood cell having no nucleus, overrides the first one that says eukaryotic cell does have a nucleus. And then there are queries. So it's a fairly straightforward syntax that is a relatively modest extension of the usual syntax for logic programs or a predicate calculusly type of syntax for first-order logic. There's a frame syntax also available for it that Flora 2 supports, for example, and so does Coherent. But let's continue to slide 6. I just wanted to flash this a bit just so you get a sense it doesn't look too mysterious or weird. There are a number of interesting advances that have been made over the last, as I say, 5, 10, 20 years, including about reasoning techniques that combine forward and backward reasoning, truth maintenance, justifications, trace analysis, using term abstraction for bounded rationality and control of, and to prevent runaway, which has been a problem that has plagued both logic programs and classical logic with logical functions. It supports quantifiers and disjunction implication within the language in a freely composed way. That's called the omniformity feature. It has a quite sophisticated form of diffusibility where meta rules specify the principles of debate. Meta rules are also used to handle bounded rationality and uses the third truth value from the semantics of LP, which was there already to handle certain cases of paradoxicality. Let's move to slide 7. Here's an example of doing ontology translation. I'm not going to take the time to go through this, but it's pretty self-contained. I think it's a very interesting thing for those of you who are really focused on ontologies to see how some of the expressive power can be leveraged for that. Let's move on to slide 8. This summarizes the textual logic approach, which I covered earlier. The key point I want to make here is that the expressive power in RULOG, just as the expressive power in common logic, acts as a very nice target when combined with this idea of using words or word senses as logical constants to enable a relatively simple and direct mapping from unrestricted natural language into logic, using the idea that a textual phrase corresponds one-to-one to a logical term, in higher order, very importantly, and with quantifiers, very importantly. Now, in the approach that has been developed at Vulcan and with some of its contractual partners and now being pursued in coherent knowledge systems is to leverage diffusibility, which helps a lot both for representing the kind of information one wants to represent that's empirical and also for evolving knowledge bases, which are related. Moving on to slide 9. Back to slide 8. One more point at the bottom of the slide I didn't mention before. Diffusibility is also important in taking a logic-based approach to NLP itself. So Peter Clark, who is an NL and machine learning expert, who's my former colleague at Vulcan, had a great phrase about this. He said, the thing about natural language is that there's a gazillion special cases. And I think that has a very obvious implication that diffusibility is very useful for NLP itself. Okay, moving on to slide 9. Here's a screenshot of looking at the justification of a query that kind of shows a bit the bones of the logic showing through, but mixes in some natural language as well and gives just a hint of what some of the space is here. We see that there's a conclusion. It is not the case that cell 52 has a nucleus, which we saw the earlier example about biology reasoning. It was an implication that cell 52, which is a red blood cell, does not have a nucleus, is concluded using the rule that red blood cells don't have nuclei, having higher priority over the rule that eukaryotic cells do have nuclei, despite the fact that cell 52 is a eukaryotic cell, that candidate argument based on the rule for eukaryotic cell is defeated and overridden by the rule for red blood cells not having nuclei. And this summarizes that conflict situation. The black minus sign here means there was an argument for the other side of the one that's the focal goal up at the top. And the red down arrow means that it was refuted, that it was thoroughly beaten by another argument from the other side that had higher priority. And we see here that some natural language generation was done on the derived statements, the inferred statements, but some logical syntax is still coming through. The pound sign here means is an instance of, and the double pound sign means is a subclass of. Anyway, I won't take the time to go through that in detail now since I already talked long enough, but I just wanted to give some sense of how there's a big space to do visualization here, you know, lay out a navigation tree, use some natural language generation, and I think it's very useful and natural to mix some logical syntax and structuring, some other kinds of more generic visualization, and some natural language processing, here text generation for terms or phrases with it, or sub-formulas within the logic become natural language phrases, such as cell 52 has a nucleus, or is a red blood cell, and so on. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, thank you, Benjamin. Very interesting. Our next speaker is Dr. Harold Boley. Most of us know him from RuleML. He's going to be talking about RuleML technology for rules and reasoning. Harold?
Thank you, Leo. So this input to the mini-series is a joint work with Adrian Paschke and Tara Essen. So let's go to slide number 1, RuleML interpretation. So RuleML is about XML-based interchange between sublanguages of RIF, Common Logic, SPVR, PR, and 3 Prolog, as well as Prolog. Slide 2 shows the family of sublanguages of RuleML. Let's walk over that family from the lower left corner with data log at the bottom, special case of Hornlock going up to the derivation rules, including also queries and ICs, integrity constraints, going further up FOL and even higher order logic. Next to that is model logic, which together form deliberation rules. Both can be seen as declarative rules. That's the left big branch of rule ML, and the right big branch is reaction rules, which goes down to ECAP and event condition action. The P stands for pause condition. And special cases of false are trigger rules like event action rules and production rules, just condition and action rules. Going to slide 3. The rule ML family covers a wide rule spectrum from those deliberation rules to reaction rules, whereas the rule condition part is reused across the spectrum. So we have just seen these ECA rules with a condition part of these event condition action rules can be reused from the left branch. The deliberation rules are really condition conclusion rules. So the condition part is the same. Of course, there can be built-ins queried into condition which are specific to more active environments, but basically the condition part is reused across the two main branches. Also, syntactic uniformity enables further reuse. So we have this uniform object-oriented XML syntax in RuleML, and other conventions like usually use child elements and not attributes when you need to refine the content at any later point, and many more conventions. So we have a nice system of conventions and that enables reuse across this whole family. The family constitutes also a deep sublanguage, Lattice, e.g. for the logical sublanguage backbone on the left side. We could go top-down for a change, starting with derivation, higher order FOL, derivation, Hornlock, and then datalog, which itself could be further refined. For instance, to binary datalog, we often call it bin datalog, which can be used for RDF, where you have triples, namely predicate, which is applied to arguments. So we have bin datalog for RDF triples. The last mix-in that you have seen at the root of that family tree can be used for customization of Hornlock or datalog RuleML. So in that case, we go towards these logic programs that Benjamin has talked about. NAF, Hornlock, RuleML more or less corresponds to LP. Proceeding to slide 4. Foundational RuleML technology. So let's start with user syntaxes. They are needed for knowledge acquisition and querying. And we have human readable syntaxes for the presentation in a symbolic form, easier to read than XML. For instance, a post-positional slotted language called Possible Prover, Prolog, and Java combined by Atrium. And also we have two-dimensional visualization languages. For instance, Benjamin alluded to Graylog, the graph inscribed logic. And you can click through in slides. And some of these topics can be expanded to parts of the mini session. The next kind of syntax is only in singular. So we want to have one serialization syntax for knowledge exchange. We can have arbitrarily many presentation syntaxes and visualization syntaxes because you can use XSLT to generate those human-oriented syntaxes from the one serialization syntax. That's a canonical form for everything, including also exchange of rules over the wire. So we can now use XML schemas to validate XML instances. In particular, we have moved towards RelaxNG, and Tara Essen designed and implemented Ming, which is implemented in PHP and is a web GUI for generating RNG, RelaxNG, or RNC, for the compact version of RNG, for fine-grained schema customization. So many readings exist for Ming, and one reading would be modularize your network grammar. So customization, fine-grained modularization is possible with Ming. You should really click to this link and see what you can do with it. The other more widely used schema language is XML schema definition, XSD. And in RoomL1.0, RNG and XSD are separate. But for future versions of RoomL, we want to generate XSD from RNG and develop everything into more concise and orthogonal language RNG. I already alluded to transformations with XSLT, for instance, so we have normalizers to the most explicit or most concise RoomL in XML. Also, we have JAXP unmarshallers for proceeding from RoomL XML into Java objects. The model theoretic semantics has been developed for PSOA RoomL in a RISC-style manner, and it is classical for NAF-free, OID, and slot-free FOL, Hornlock, DataLock, RoomL. The engines are the real foundation of the technology, and we have a number of them. OOJDRU, I've been developing Prover, as I mentioned, Adrian and colleagues. Prover is both a language and an engine. So OOJDRU is for NAF Hornlock, for LP. Prover is also good for reaction RoomL. DR device by Nick Basiliadis is for defeasible reasoning. Vampire Prime is the first order logic prover by Alex Ryazanov. And there are more. Proceeding to slide 5. You can see on the right hand side a visualization of the own rule base that we have often used to demonstrate different versions of RoomL and translations to other systems. On the left hand side of slide 5, you can see the first rule in XML. So we have here a sub language of RoomL of the family, namely the data log, which was at the lower left of deliberation RoomL. So the left hand XML shows that we have a conjunction, an end, in the premise of our implies, and it contains ternary predicate by. Person, merchant, and object are the three arguments to by, and the visualization shows a hyperarc starting at person, cutting through merchant, and ending at object, and is labeled with by. So these directed hyperarcs are natural generalization of binary arcs, like we need for the second conjunct to keep binary relation between person and object. And this whole conjunction in this orbital implies person on object. Proceeding to slide 6, that shows Ming, the GUI. So what you can now do is to generate this blue highlighted URL. And you can see it's rnc.php. Then the question mark, that's the official URL syntax, and we have now attributes, for instance, backbone equal, and then we have hex encoding for the leftmost column at the bottom of the slide, expressivity backbone. That is the backbone of the RoomL family from binary data log to data log to Hornlock and so on. And you can check one of these, and that would be encoded, for instance, as X3F. The next choice comes for the default values. So here the radio button is at optional. So that's encoded as X7 and so on. So Tara had all of these aspects systematically in source attributes and encoded in a lattice which can exploit inheritance. And we have written a paper about that. Slide 9 continues source choices. Some of them are options where you can have zero or more. Proceeding to slide 8, extended RULML technology. So we have translators, for instance, between RULML and POSL, from PSOA to TPTP. I mentioned Vampire Prime, which can read TPTP. Then also from ACE to RULML, and some other translators between RULML and Prolog, Chess, N3, and so on. We also have technologies for APIs, including RULstore API, and we collaborate with OMG on API for KB. Then we have two multi-agent frameworks built directly on RULML. Adrian and I have worked on Rule Responder with many students and colleagues, and also joined forces with Nick Basiliadis, who designed and implemented Emerald with his students. You can find more when you click through here. And there are more tools which you can find on the wiki as shown. Slide 9. RULML is the basis for other languages, including most notably Swirl, and also Swissl, and more recently Legal RULML. The first two were member submissions to WCC, and the third one is an OASIS technical committee. So I use different generations of RULML. Slide 10, RULML uses, so we have specific use cases including chemical XML elements, the well-known Wine ontology, which has been used in OpenRULBench by Michael Kiefer and Benjamin Crossoff and others to benchmark RULE engines. So this famous Wine ontology was available in the presentation syntax of Prolog after it came from R. So the OpenRULBench colleagues converted R to Prolog, and we then converted that to RULML XML. So that's available as a repository. Then we have an NB business knowledge base, an expert finder using rules and taxonomies, and an e-tourism planner, and more. In more recent years, we have used rule responder instantiations to develop more RULML applications. For instance, one instantiation is our ongoing effort to do symposium planning for our own series of symposia, RULML 20XY, in RULML itself. Other instantiations of RULESPONDER include wellness rules and patient supporter. And also, as I just mentioned, RULML is used as basis for other languages. Proceeding to slide 11, further reading. So the wiki contains corresponding material, and then there are three groups of links for RULML 1.0, Reaction RULML 1.0, and Gradlog 1.0. Thank you. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Harold. Very interesting talk. I'm sure we'd like to get into more details in the series. Our next speaker is Dr. John Soa, VivoMind Intelligence. We all know John from Ontolog Forums distribution list and research through the years. He'll be talking on relating classical and non-monotonic reasoning. John, you want to make sure that you're not muted, so star 7.
Okay. Is that okay now?
Yes, that's good. Thank you.
As my first slide, the title is Relating Classical and Non-Monotonic Reasoning. And the basic point that I want to make is that the semantic foundation for classical logic is identical to the semantic foundation for every version of non-monotonic reasoning. Now, for some versions, in fact, for the most widely versions of non-monotonic reasoning, it's possible to do a systematic mapping of the non-monotonic methods into the classical logic with a classical proof, but with a modified set of assumptions and constraints. And I'll go in a bit more detail about this. So in slide 1, or actually this is slide 2, I summarize the foundation for formal semantics according to Wittgenstein. That was in his first book, the Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus, in which he starts off with proposition 1, the world is everything that is the case. 1.1, the world is a totality of facts, not of things. That is the assumption that the world is itself a model in the sense of Tarski's model theory. The world is a model of that determines whatever is true or false in any particular language. And for Wittgenstein, he was considering natural languages, or in particular, that subset of natural languages which he considered clear. And he said, as in section sentence 4.116, everything that can be said clearly. And he later modified that in his philosophy, in which he accepted everything that anybody would use in language. But in his early version, it corresponds pretty much to a controlled natural language, or to something along the lines that Benjamin called a text logic, where you have a very specialized logic which happens to use the syntax and semantics of ordinary language. And the assumptions that Wittgenstein made back in 1921-22 are essentially the same ones that dominated formal semantics for the entire 20th century, and they're still lingering on into the 21st century. The basic point is that the world is a model, and that model determines the truth or falsity of any sentence in language or logic. Now, slide 3 shows the world, a model, and a theory. Now, the world is far, far more complex than anything that anybody could conceivably conceive of, model, represent, or talk about. But and that is the ultimate test of what do we mean when we're saying anything meaningful about the world. Now, as I said, Wittgenstein assumed that the world and the model were identical. And if you have only one world, there's one model, one ontology, and it's impossible to have any approximation, because any approximation would be simply false. But engineers have a more cynical view, actually, and far more realistic, and that is that all models are wrong, some are useful. Now, in the center, that model is represented as a graph, and any kind of Tarski-style model, which consists of individuals, functions, and relations, can be represented as a graph. So just assume that this is a typical Tarski-style model. But that Tarski-style model could also be used as a description of an engineering model. And so for the time being, I will say, when I use the word model, I won't make a sharp distinction between an engineering model that an engineer would use and a Tarski-style model of a set of axioms. I'll say that the model is what determines the truth or falsity of any particular theory. That's known as the denotation. And on the right is a particular theory. And using that Tarski-style techniques, you can determine whether or not any particular axiom of the model, of the theory, has denotation true or false in terms of the model, and whether the conjunction of all of the axioms that determine the entire theory, whether that entire theory has denotation true or false. But we also have to consider the real world, where all of our models are wrong, at least to some extent, and then we can measure the approximation, which could be good, fair, poor. We could measure it in terms of what the physicists do in setting error bounds. We can use various methods of statistics, probability, fuzzy logic, all sorts of ways of measuring the approximation of how adequate this model is as a representation of the world for whatever purpose we happen to have. And to summarize, section 4 distinguishes syntax, semantics, and pragmatics. And for any formal logic, the syntax is defined by a grammar. The semantics is defined by an evaluation function which maps any sentence and any model into the denotation true or false of whether or not that sentence is indeed true or false in terms of that model. This syntax and semantics are prior to any kind of proof procedure. The proof procedures are always determined, are always evaluated in terms of their adequacy in terms of the model theory. So the model theory comes first. And the point that I want to emphasize, which is usually not emphasized by most logicians, however, it's very consistent with Wittgenstein's later philosophy and with a lot of the work that's being done in natural language, and that is that pragmatics consists of an open-ended family of methods of using the syntax and semantics of the sentences in L. So when I talk about the semantics, all I mean is the syntax and the model theory that determines denotation. And when I talk about proofs, I say there's an open-ended family of ways of using logic. And according to Peirce, there are three basic methods, deduction, induction, and abduction. They're all based on the same evaluation function for determining whether a statement is true or false. All methods of theory revision are based on the same method. All non-classical proof procedures, including intuitionistic proofs or non-monotonic proofs, are also based on that same evaluation function. And more generally, every method of analysis, planning, message passing, learning, and I would also add logic programming, I forgot to put that into this list, and question answering, they're all based on that same model theoretic semantics. So all of these semantic pragmatic methods are based on the same foundation as classical logic, and they can be related to the classical logic. So that's the point that I want to emphasize in the next few slides, just to go into a little more detail. Slide five shows is a slide about learning, and it makes the point that here's an example. We have six observations. Tweety is a bird, Daffy is a bird, Hooty is a bird, Tweety flies, Daffy flies, Hooty flies. Now those are six low-level statements, could be translated to ground-level statements in whatever logic you have. Now by induction, we derive some general axioms. By induction, I mean data mining, your typical data mining methods. And from that we get every bird flies, every flying thing is a bird, for every X, X is a bird if and only if X flies. Now, these are three different generalizations, and we could take just half of the facts and add to it any one of these three generalizations, and we can derive the other half of the facts. And the advantage of this is that we thereby reduce the total memory load because we only need to memorize half as many facts, and then all we need to do is add one general axiom, and we can recover all the other facts. So the importance of learning is reducing your memory load by reducing the number of raw facts you have to learn. But the point is that you have to determine which generalization to use. Now, you can use all kinds of heuristics, and one version might give you a slight preference for the axiom every bird flies, but you cannot rule out the other axioms. Now, the slide six shows that new information that comes in can trigger belief revision or non-monotonic reasoning. So the new observation comes in and says, Vampy is not a bird, but Vampy flies. So this rules out two of those axioms, and the only axiom that's left is every bird flies. Then we get another observation, Tux is a penguin, Tux is a bird, but Tux does not fly. Okay, so then we have to make another revision. We restrict the universal quantifier, and we say every bird that is not a penguin flies. And this is the kind of reasoning that you do in belief revision, non-monotonic reasoning. What you're doing is using exactly the same syntax, exactly the same model theory, but you are making changes in your assumptions and constraints. Now, Benjamin was mentioning natural language, and this gets into huge numbers of issues. And here's an example on slide seven. What is a chair? Now, a diagram that I like is one by Fritz Lehmann and Tony Cohn, that they had the egg yolk theory. And it shows that you can take the dictionary definition of a chair as a piece of furniture that has a seat and a back for one person and usually with four legs. And in the yolk part, there we have some examples that meet the common definition of a chair, and they are the ones that everybody would assume is a typical chair. Then in the egg white, we have things that are called chairs, like a wheelchair or a rocking chair and so on. Those are also called chairs, but they violate typical assumptions. Then outside the egg white, we have a stool and a set of stairs, which could be used as chairs, and they have the same function, and they have a lot of similarities, and your set of stairs even has a back, but they're not quite the same. And then on the borderline, we have things like a toilet, which is awfully similar to a chair. However, the seat happens to have a hole in the middle, and it has different functions. So those are the kinds of things that we get constantly in every area of natural language, in every area of any practical application. We're going to get those kinds of applications, those kinds of defaults and violations of our assumptions, and that is very important for our logic programming, non-monotonic reasoning, everything. Now, people say, well, yes, but mathematics is precise. And I would say, yes, but. Question is, what is a number? It's true that every theory of mathematics is very precise. You've got a fixed set of axioms, and you can and use classical reasoning about those axioms, but the definition of what is a number changes with every new theory. And the original numbers are there in the yoke. Those are the basic integers. And then you have to add the number zero. You have to add rational numbers. You have to add irrational numbers, negative numbers, complex numbers. Then you get all these funny things that are sort of on the borderline, like infinitesimals, quaternions, octonions. Then you have things that are just outside the egg white that are similar. You have matrices, vectors, geometric algebras. And the point is that the concept of what is a number changes. And if you go to computer science, all bets are off. You say, what is a file? What is a database? And every implementation has a different definition. And then any definition that you have from a single vendor is going to change with every update. It's going to change with every fix. Every time Microsoft has their update Tuesday, all bets are off about what definitions are going to change. And so the fact is that even in your most precise systems of mathematics and computer science, you need some kind of non-monotonic methods of belief revision or so on. So here's some more examples. Slide 9, it shows the issues about orientation, background knowledge, context. There's an example on the left is a picture of four presidents that are approaching a tree. And for each of, and you can say there, the presidents are in front of the tree because each of them is in front of that tree, and the tree has no preferred front. So you could say for any one of them that is in front of it. On the other hand, on the right-hand side, we have a cannon, and the cannon does have a preferred directions, so you couldn't really say that all four of them are in front of the cannon. Slide 10 has another example about motion, that from the point of view of the speaker, the oak tree is in front of the is in front or before the poplar tree, but from the point of view of the motion of the bicyclists, the priest is in front of the minister. And here's a point that the issue of motion overrides the issue of the speaker's perspective. And and when you get to slow-moving things like snails and turtles, the speaker would typically treat them more like stationary objects unless the motion is relevant. So the question of what is relevant, what is the context, that can also determine what language you use in natural language or what axiom you use in any kind of formal system. Issues about function. The pear is in the bowl. Well, the apples and they are enclosed in the sides of the bowl, but the pear happens to be on top of the apples, and almost all of the pear is outside the bowl. However, in ordinary English and French, the preposition normally links, the preposition dans or in, normally links something to a container, and the primary function of the bowl is to serve as a container, so the function of the bowl overrides the question of whether or not the bowl actually encloses the pear. This is another example in natural language, but you have the same issues if you want to formalize your language in any kind of, in any version of logic for any kind of practical purpose. Next slide, 12, has issues about background knowledge. There we have a bird cage, and sitting on top, you would say the bird is outside the cage. Then on the right, there's a knife that you could also say the knife is outside the cage, but normally you wouldn't say that. Now, the cage, most people would know that a cage is typically used to enclose a bird, and your a bird cage plays sometimes used to enclose a bird, and that's one of the little pieces in your default knowledge that would go that might go into your non-monotonic system. However, a cage is an unlikely container for a knife, so you would not normally say that the knife is outside the cage. Normally, you would say the knife is to the right of the cage. On the other hand, if for some reason somebody had put a knife in the cage, the person you were talking to happened to know that the knife had been in the cage, then somebody might say a comment that the knife is outside the cage to say that something changed the default situation that that particular person had assumed. There's a huge number of these examples that can be continued indefinitely. And for all of them, we need some kind of method of non-monotonic reasoning. Now, in the methods that I have been using, and which I'll be writing up in a little more detail in another note that I have promised to write, I've adopted the three kinds of bridges. They're the bridges are the term that Mackensen used. He wrote a book called Bridges from Classical to Non-Monotonic Reasoning. And his three bridges are that what you can do is to modify the set of assumptions, modify the constraints on permissible models, or use rules to make incremental changes of assumptions or constraints on the models during a proof. So that those are the three kinds of methods, and the point that Mackensen makes is that you can use those three bridges to take any classical proof procedure and use it in conjunction with some method of belief revision to get non-monotonic effects. But Mackensen also made the point that you can go, that the bridges go in both directions, so you can take a very wide range, the most widely used non-monotonic proof procedures, and use them to convert a non-monotonic proof into a classical proof with a changed set of assumptions and constraints, or, as you would say in logic, a set of axioms. And Mackensen was making the difference between assumptions and constraints, as the assumptions are sort of the kinds of are the assumptions that are the most obvious ones, and those are the ones that you would typically put into the constraints, into the assumptions. The constraints are statements which are more likely to constrain a range of models that you are considering, and they're sort of more deeply entrenched, to use the terminology that's often used in belief revision. But if you're using a classical logic, there's no difference between assumptions and constraints. They are both formulas in your logic, which you can use as a set of axioms for your theories. And the point that Mackensen made is that you can go that for the most widely used methods of non-monotonic reasoning, these three methods can modifying the assumptions, constraining the models, or using rules that make incremental changes. Those three bridges are can be used to map a proof in non-monotonic logic into an equivalent logical proof that starts from a modified set of axioms. And I'm going to add more of detail about these things and relate them to common logic, because I believe that the semantics for common logic with the kind of bridges that Mackensen defined can be used for a very, very wide range of logics, including all of the methods, the typical methods based on negation as failure, the typical methods based on default reasoning or prioritized defaults, or a wide range of methods that you make incremental changes during a proof, that all of them can be based on these methods. Now, however, that Mackensen did make the point, and I want to emphasize, that there are many, many exotic methods of non-monotonic logic and non-monotonic reasoning, which may not use exactly these three bridges, or they may require variations of it in order to do that mapping. But the point is still remains true that going back to all the way back to slide number three, that's the one about the world and the model, you're always going to have some classical method for evaluating truth. That classical method for evaluating truth, there's always going to be a model theory for evaluating truth. That model theory can be used for either non-monotonic reasoning or for classical reasoning, and it's the change in the pragmatics that makes the difference. And you can take a very rich and very expressive version of classical logic, such as common logic, and you can use that with many, many different versions of pragmatics to support a very wide range of non-monotonic methods. Now, my hypothesis is that all of the methods that Benjamin was talking about would fit within this paradigm, but again, I'd have to talk with Benjamin about it and to check whether or not all of these methods fit. But I believe that that hypothesis is correct, and I plan to write more about it so that I'll notify Ontolog Forum and the Common Logic mailing list about some of these issues as time goes on. So that's basically the points I wanted to make.
Thank you, John. I hope to hear, I think we all hope to hear more in the future about this. Our next speaker is Dr. Henson Graves of Elgos Associates. He'll be talking on the role of diagrams in logic-based modeling and ontologies. Henson, star 7, if you're muted.
I just did. Thank you.
Thank you.
First thing is I made a bad mistake that I took your direction seriously, that the purpose of this session today was, proposing topics and planning what we might do as opposed to discoursing on some particular topic.
You did this correctly. That's what we wanted to address, so.
Right. So anyway, the first slide is just gives a proposed topic, which, by the way, I didn't see on the ones that you mentioned as candidate topics, but be that as it may. Second topic is actually I think it is worthwhile looking at what the success criteria for a miniseries such as we're talking about is. And what I think is, it's the success criteria for such a miniseries is very different from the sort of general set things that go, the summit, which, of course, is aimed at a very broad audience. And what I think one wants to be very careful about here is not to be too broad or inclusive, as the whole miniseries should be primarily aimed at individuals with experience and background on the issues. And what I think that the series should do is to attempt to establish a dialogue between the diverse experts on, some different aspects of whatever topics we choose. Just in passing, one of the things I would love to see is to take an example of, say, some kind of molecule, since several people have mentioned it, Benjamin and so on, and look at how it gets formalized in different logics and how questions might be answered in different logics as a way of comparing the different formalisms. Also, I think that the miniseries should have planned to produce some concrete deliverables which would be useful to practitioners in, you know, in the different related fields. So slide three is the particular topic that I suggested. The background on that is, given the pervasiveness of engineering and science models, which depend heavily on diagrams, and also the fact that one does need to use automated reasoning to determine model consequences just because the models are so large and complex, that a serious question, which of course is related to a number of the talks here, is what kind of logic-based formalisms are best suitable for the models which employ these diagrams? And note, this does, of course, include representation of what we experience as part of the physical world. I mean, this is the, you know, the kind of things that John was talking about. But it I would propose excluding things that are other aspects of graphics that are just for explanation and stuff like that. That is, to me, what's interesting in the way I would choose to bound it is where the graphics do correspond directly to actually the axiom set or the theory that one is constructing. So slide four is what an example of the kind of goals or deliverables that one might have is to establish some requirements for a logic-based representation of, you know, these kinds of models, determine what the major formalism approaches are, and establish a prognosis for effective automated reasoning for the class of models under consideration. Going on to slide five, I think as well as success conditions, there are failure conditions. And the failure conditions to me would be where you have primarily individuals attempting to sell some particular solution independently of what the topic of the miniseries is, and where it's really just monologues by experts, you know, often without informed user comments and questions. And the real fear is that the series attempts too much, that is, it attempts to solve some kind of ontological world hunger. So that's all I've got to say right now.
Okay, good. Thank you, Hansen. Yes, I think that the issues you're raising here are the issues that we want to address. We understand the topics involved, but we really want to plan out what this miniseries will, you know, include, but also what it will exclude, and attempt to be focused and to address a plan for the miniseries. At this point, what I'd like to do is actually open it up for discussion among all the participants. I would suggest you raise your hand in the chat room if you have a question or a comment, let's try to, you know, address what this miniseries will actually consist of, and you know, converge on a concrete plan. Maybe to get us up, there's Peter. Okay.
All the presentations are good, and thanks to Hansen for bringing us back in focus on what needs to be done today. I like the way the various earlier speakers laid the groundwork on what could possibly be discussed, and looks like we have a huge range of topics that would be very interesting. And I was slightly taken aback when Benjamin says to go through RULOC alone, we need at least three sessions. So I just wanted to remind everyone that we're generally planning this mini-series for the period that's between September and mid-December. That's about 3 months and a bit. That's not a lot, and we don't have every Thursday over these 3 months. The meaningful suggestion is to pick like one session a month, which means we should only have 3 to 4 for the rest of the year. But then, of course, the mini-series does not have to end by the end of this year or by the time we make way for the next Ontology Summit. Like before, when we had a mini-series on database and ontologies, that series went on for more than a year, which means we had, like, I think if I remember correctly, like 13 or 14 monthly sessions that went on. So we would probably want to discuss how long do we want to run this mini-series. Do we pick it in two stages? One, sort of provide exposure, and then a sort of follow-on that to drill down even more, or do we want to run it sort of linearly? So that's one thought. So that's all I want to say for now. I'll probably come back later.
Thank you, Peter. Yes, Benjamin?
So I just want to make a quick comment. As I mentioned, as far as like number of sessions about RUOG, I mean, I think we can kind of dial up what makes sense. And what I was saying is that to cover the content of the conference tutorial would be about 3 sessions. But that includes a lot of the material about interoperability, you know, relationship to other approaches such as Common Logic and OWL and standards, and also a lot about use cases and applications. So, you know, I think it's really up to us to decide how we'd like to focus things. I mean, it seems to me it's probably important to get people on the same page as far as understanding what some of the major approaches, to use Henson's phrase, are, and how they relate to each other at the basic level, and then talk about use cases, standards, tools, etc. To that end, I think you know, we could have one session on the kind of KR concepts and semantics of RULOG, point at additional material that's available, you know, in the tutorial deck or other places. Then have one, say, on Common Logic, and some discussion of how the two relate to each other. Then have a session on RULML as a kind of umbrella for interoperability between them and other approaches, such as you know, Jenna, Sparkle, Swirl, etc. And you know, Peter, maybe that would be a good way to handle the short term. You know, I think there'll be some discussion of use cases and so on, some discussion of tools along the way, but probably mainly pointers on that. But I think it's probably important for people to get a good kind of conceptual foundation. I found, and so have other people doing tutorials in this space, that's very important for people to come away with. On the other hand, to get them motivated, it's very helpful to start with use cases and applications. So, you know, another whole approach would be start with a session about that, about, you know, what are the kinds of things people are doing with different approaches, and then let that be a way to kind of draw people into, okay, let's figure out how they relate to each other, the different approaches. So, seems to me that's kind of a basic issue. I mean, I think things like visualization, natural language, probabilistic data, you know, data, what people is calling data analysis now. Those probably are good for kind of a second wave of stuff. That's at least the way that I'm thinking about it now. I'm open to counter arguments on that.
Okay, good. Yes, thank you, Benjamin. Peter?
Benjamin, I just wanted to make sure you don't get me wrong. I love everything you proposed. I mean, I would really think, capturing those into the archived body of knowledge would be a great value and great service to the community. So don't get me wrong. And it's just staging them. And I like your proposal about the first wave and the second wave. And if you could capture that onto the chat, in terms of, let's say, the few sessions in the first wave and then what can follow, that would be great. I also want to mention, since on your slides you mentioned standards. Some of you were with us last week, but a few weren't. Last week we actually had what we call an ontology-based standards mini-series that ran a brainstorm and planning sessions just like this one. And one of the things they also brought up was, on rules and reasoning, and they also said, let's take a pause until we see what comes out next week at this session, which is today. And I can see sort of that standards piece to be a collaboration between the two series. The ontology-based standards series and this rules reasoning and logic programming mini series. So we could also keep that in mind. Again, for that series, they probably would run another three, maybe four sessions between September and the end of the year. And if it goes on, it will sort of run into next year, possibly maybe after Ontology Summit 2014, which probably would mean that the series will have to resume sometime in May, in skipping like January through April, which we sort of put aside for the sort of heavy agenda that each year's Ontology Summit would try to pick up. Back to you.
Okay, yeah, Peter. So maybe planning a joint session with the standards group might be a good, one of the sessions of the mini series.
Yes, I'll capture that as well for a reminder, and I'll rely on Benjamin to help capture the other thoughts that he has.
Sure. Yeah, and Benjamin, yes, please add to the chat your suggestions. We're kind of doing a brainstorming here, but we want to nail down the plans as concretely as possible. And it may be a good idea to stage this so we have maybe 3-4 months here this year, then we have the Ontology Summit, but of course the interest in these topics and the extent we can get through may not be able to this year, so maybe we should restart the series after the Ontology Summit next year, where we possibly do some deeper diving on some issues. So maybe the suggestion might be this first stage, if you will, this year will kind of address these topics at a higher level. I saw that Henson had a comment about is this going to be tutorial based, and I don't think it's tutorial based. I think what we're raising is we're exchanging information and knowledge about this spectrum of topics. There's tutorial elements that come into play simply because that we have some experts in various things that we may not know about, but it's not, strictly speaking, a tutorial-based miniseries. I see Harold has a comment.
Right. So last week I could not make it because of traveling, and others also couldn't make it, but I gave the link. And Michael Grudenscher was keynote speaker at RULML, and we have also been working with Elisa Kendall. Now, I agree it would be a great thing to have some joint sessions between last week and this week's planning community, and they highly overlap. For instance, Roots and Reasoning, a special case also for this first-order kind of reasoning that is possible with common logic that's pursued by Michael Grudenscher. And we have started to discuss with Michael about joining forces with RULML and common logic. Also this onto IOP. So onto IOP, which is now part of ONG, I guess, but still highly collaborating with ISO, common logic, is also covering similar ground as we do in RULML, trying to have a landscape of different expressivity for languages and corresponding reasoning engines. So there is a huge area that we need to pick from, and I'm not sure what is the best didactic process or layering of that. But one way to layer things is to start with less expressive languages. We talked about databases, data lock, horn lock, and then upward, and then go up to FOL in one branch of the family tree, but then also look at the other branch. Actually, active rules, what we call reaction rules, are even more popular in industry. Finite event detection, complex event processing, and then action in the real world, or at least on the database.
What I would try to do is capture, if you can express what you said in the chat room so we don't lose it, this would be useful. I think that, you know, we don't want to just do standards, period, because, again, we'll be immersed in that topic by itself. And the ontology standard mini-series will be mostly addressing the ontology, if you will, some of these standards that are not strictly based on rules. So, but I do think there is some overlap. John, you have a comment.
Okay, so there's a number of points that were made about whether or not these talks in the mini-series should be just tutorials. Well, again, I don't think they should be just tutorials. On the other hand, a lot of tutorial material is needed to explain what the person is trying to say, but they should be tutorials about how some particular method is to be used to solve the general goals of the entire series, so that there would undoubtedly be a lot of tutorial in it, but there would also have to be tailored tutorial that would not just be a blanket tutorial for anybody, but just a tailored tutorial specifically for that particular series, aimed at reaching or helping the whole community reach the goals of the series. I also wanted to make a couple of comments. There were some questions in the chat about my own talk, and I would say that the general answer is there's a huge amount of detail that I didn't have time to present. And the basic idea was that, when somebody said, well, Mackensen's methods aren't widely used. Well, the answer is that Mackensen's methods are very general methods, which are used in a very wide range of cases. For example, a negation as failure is typically related to classical logic by method number one that Madison has, namely, you add a set of assumptions. The blanket method is closed world assumption, which just adds a huge number of, say, that everything that is not provable is an assumption to be added. More targeted methods are just saying what we'll do is just add those particular assumptions that are necessary for this particular proof. And then the another question was how many there's this open-ended number of methods. How do you know which ones to pick? And the answer is, well, the ones you pick are the ones that are based on the particular logic you're trying to map into classical logic. So that if you have a logic, a non-monotonic logic based on default reasoning with prioritized defaults, then you use one method. If you have a different method of default reasoning, you would use a different bridge. But basically, the general principle holds that there is, in general, a way of taking any method of non-monotonic reasoning and relating it to a classical, to the same semantics used for a classical logic. So that's, and I think that that is key to really understanding how a whole range of different kinds of logics and different methodologies all fit together.
That's a good point. Thank you, John. Peter.
Yes, I was trying to make a quick comment to Harold Bowley's remark. Actually, the Onto IOP is moving their work base to OMG. This is still work in progress. The Onto IOP working group still has to create their proposal, present it to the OMG architecture board, and so on. But that's on the way. So before we know it, Onto IOP will be working under the roof of OMG. That's one. The other thing which I found very interesting, and I have this question for Hansen, is that, I mean, you did correctly pointed out that we hope this mini-series will produce concrete deliverables useful to practitioners in the field. And, of course, in Ontolog virtual sessions and mini-series and so on, the concrete deliverable, at least traditionally, is the presentations and the archived artifacts of all that body of knowledge. So my question to you is, besides those, and besides a sort of properly well-planned, well-flowed mini-series of knowledge that gets captured and is reusable, at least reaccessible for years and years to come, what else are you looking for, or would you
I gave some suggestions in my talk. And I would say that whether the presentations serve that role depends on whether they are suitably focused and scoped to deal with what is decided to be the real topic or topics for the miniseries. If it's just a bunch of presentations, that's mildly useful, but doesn't necessarily serve, in my mind, as really adequate deliverables for such a miniseries.
So you're mainly talking about how those presentations are delivered. I mean, as opposed to, let's say, suggesting other activities like last Ontology Summit, we had surveys, we had like hackathons and things like those. And those are not what you are suggesting.
Well, for example, again, one of the suggested deliverables was some, list or discussion of the basic approaches to solving, certain kinds of problems. I kind of doubt from what I've seen that one would find that in any specific talk. That is, the talks would talk about here's an approach to solve world hunger, as opposed to the different experts identifying different approaches, let's say, to embedding graphics in a logical language, for example.
Okay. I think we have about 15 minutes, folks, so we, you know, want to focus as much as we can on the structure of our series, even though we will obviously have organizing sessions to continue our planning. So if you're interested, obviously, in helping to organize the series, please do volunteer and let us know. You may have contributions yourself. You may be involved in, want to be involved in particular sessions that we plan on. But in addition, we need folks to help us organize this to make sure that we're getting the correct spectrum of series over this year and maybe next year.
Also, I mean, for those who are among us today, if you have specific person's work that you would recommend, as, I mean, of course, the work being relevant to this series, please make the suggestions on the chat now. That would be extremely important because, I mean, that's sort of the pool of people we will consider inviting into sort of building out this series.
I see that Hansen reiterated maybe having a specific example. You might actually want to describe that a little more than Hansen, at least in the chat. I'm not sure if a chemical molecule would be a good example, but I think that if we, at least for some of what we do, a concrete example that maybe looks at some of the issues, and I'm thinking of John Soa's presentation immediately, but that may enable us to kind of focus on how the different ontology and rule reasoning systems would address that model and its potentially the reasoning, the behavior of that model. Yes, Harold?
During my travel, I talked to Vinnie shortly, and Vinnie has also been very active in such examples. Actually, Benjamin Vinnie and many others have collaborated, funded by Vulcan, on what's now called BioKB 101. And that's actually all uploaded now on the web. When you go to Vinnie's talk, there are many links in his PDF. And some of the links lead to the repository he has created, or Michael Wessel, actually, has put together. So I used as the original format KM, Knowledge Machine, by Peter Clark and others, and have translated it to several other formats, including SILK, which is now RULOC, FOL, Presentation Syntax. Some subset of BioKB 101 was also translated to R, and I think one was also to F-Logic, or that was part of SILK. Now, Gensho, my student, is also interested in such an endeavor. We need use cases for many purposes, and I wonder if we could look into subsets of BioKB 101, which are easier to start with and then work from a simple example to a more advanced.
Okay, good. Let's see. If you could put some pointers in chat, Harold, to your comments.
Yeah,
I was just about information. Hansen?
Well, one reason for suggesting chemical model molecules is that the description logic people have spent a lot of effort on trying to represent those with both in description logic and various extensions. And one of the issues is how to represent those models, i.e. really axiom sets, so that they don't have any non-intended models in the Tarskian sense. And so that's actually, the questions are quite interesting, and they actually bear on whether the kind of frameworks of description logic and some of the logic programming frameworks that they're beginning to use are actually good ones, and how they compare with some of the rule-based things that we're hearing about now or maybe already know about.
Yes, okay, so are you proposing anyone in particular or, that could be involved as a speaker?
I'm more proposing I could certainly come up with people, but the real thing is to take the example, not have another tutorial. Take the example and have the experts that we've got take it apart.
Okay, yes. You know, I mentioned a few other things in the chat room that I haven't seen yet, like there's been attempts like description logic programming, but other types of reasoning that combine semantic web and logic programming. A lot of this we've talked about, and obviously Benjamin's system addresses and various other things we've talked about. But it's also the case that we don't solidly have a semantic web presence here, so maybe others involved in that community could be involved in some of the many series that we're planning. Yes, Adrian.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that this whole topic of distributed inference services and reasoning might be also relevant. Like Harold mentioned in his slide, Direction Rule ML, which provides support for such distributed reasoning. As well in OMG, there's an effort API for KV, which is also addressing inference-based distributed reasoning services.
Okay, good, yes.
I think that's in general also important from the semantic web perspective, that usually most of the systems in the end should be distributed inference services.
And I also recall, you know, John's been involved too with Paul Turow, who through various incarnations have had has done research on initially from Ben Prolog perspective, but having miniature distributed reasoning agents, if you will, in a logic programming framework. So let's see, Henson, do you? I see your hand still up. Are you? Do you have another comment?
No, that's it. I remove myself.
Okay.
But that's a question from Ray Martin to Henson. So asking for clarification on the his intended miniseries audience, I suppose.
Oh, okay, yes. Henson, did you want to maybe address, let's see.
Yes. First is, I would like something that I could use, which means, you know, I know something about these different topics, but there are certainly limits, and there are a number of very interesting questions that I would love to hear the insights of the other, of the experts. And I suspect that other people that have some, interest in this general topic would also, you know, benefit from that. And again, I don't see that as quite the same thing as the presentations themselves. That is, I want something that I can take away that justifies having spent my time on it. You can let me know if you think that's sufficient.
Was your question answered by Henson there?
Ray Martin.
Oh, it's okay.
Actually, man, I would still love to get a bit more clarification. Maybe Henson, you can put it on the chat. So when you say you, do you represent like systems modelers or system engineers, software engineers, system architects, or I think, I mean, if you can define what those concrete deliverables?
Well,
I would
when I
easier.
Say me, I mean, for example, I'm someone who has some interest in foundations and also has interest in practically building engineering models and integrating them with reasoning systems and all of that kind of thing. And that's, at least in a rough sense, I think what the people that would be interested in any of these collections of topics would probably have some kind of analogous interest. They have some background, some knowledge in the different formalism approaches, the different tools that have been used, different knowledge representation principles, and probably have experience in some areas, not that they would all necessarily have the experience of the same areas.
Okay, folks, we're getting short on time, so we have about 3 minutes here. What I would make sure is that you have comments, that you capture those in the chat room so we don't lose things. Benjamin.
Hi. I recorded my comments from earlier in the chat and added a few, including a response to Henson's suggestion and some other people's comments. But I guess my question is, what's next steps on the miniseries planning? What's our process for that?
So I think that what we have to do here is, we've done this brainstorming. Now we really have to look at what we've done and talked about today, at least the core group of organizers, and probably have a second session where we, and part of this will obviously can be done in email, but we should have another session where we try to lay out explicitly what the series will be about. Consider speakers for the topics. It sounds like we're thinking in terms of two stages. So we might think of what we want to accomplish this year in maybe 3 or 4 sessions that doesn't necessarily go into detail that we may want to address later next year. And therefore, we're a bit more general, perhaps, for this year for these sessions. But it's something I think that we have to concretely plan for. So I would suggest another session to do so. Peter, I don't know that the standards group last week. Were they able to finalize a plan for their series?
Yeah, they had very concrete proposals which ran up to like 8 sessions, and I think maybe even more because some of those needed more than one session. We agreed to continue to do that over email, actually. So I would suggest this group to do that similarly. I think Benjamin's proposed sort of first wave, second wave is a very tangible baseline that we could build upon and then we can take it from there. We may or may not even need another phone call, and we definitely not another community session. It's quite possible that we could do it with email and the wiki. I have not sort of built out the homepage for this mini series because the acronym Rules Reasoning LP is just a placeholder. I like to find out if people are happy with that Rules Reasoning LP as the moniker for this mini series. If so, then I can continue to build out that as a homepage. I didn't want to build a lot of things into it and then find that we wanted to change the name. I think the long name is great, which Harold Boldly suggested, the ontology rules and logic programming for reasoning and applications. That's good, but we need something much shorter as a moniker. So it's Rules Reasoning LP, good for everyone, or is there alternative suggestions, objections, and things?
What was it, ontology rules reasoning or something, LP?
Go to the top of the session page or the top of the chat So we have the long description as mini-series on ontology rules and logic programming for reasoning and applications, and then with the moniker as rules reasoning LP.
I think that's fine because we all know that we're involved in ontologies here, so.
Yeah. So if that's fine, we'll settle in on that and I'll start building out the wiki page. And once we have a wiki homepage, I guess at least that would be the kickoff place for most of the other discussions and things.
Okay. I guess we'll continue this in email. Any final comments, folks? We're a little bit over right now, but there's your chance. I'll also in chat place your comments. Okay, if there's nothing else, then we have to continue this in email and finalize what this series will look like. But I think we've done a lot of good brainstorming today. Thank you, folks, and goodbye.
Great session. Thanks, everyone. Thanks to all the panelists, and bye.
Bye.